Accession number 10602, reel 29.
Mr. Elliot, reel 29. You were just saying at the very end your reasons for why you didn't want to stay on as a sergeant. Can you?
The Prevost, I've done the Prevost stuff. Well, as one CO had promised for 3 months, and a new CO had come, he said 3 months. That CO could have gone, and I could have been there as a lance corporal forever after, waiting for new COs to say yes or no, where I knew if I went back to duty I had better chances of promotion, because they were a very young soldiers battalion and they hadn't got very many qualified old soldiers. Mind, that's not running these youngsters down, because they were good, no mistake about that.
You said earlier on that you didn't really want to be a provost sergeant, but you did it. Why didn't you want to be one?
No soldier likes policemen of any sort. I don't know why. It's an inborn inheritance, I think, if you like. Normally soldiers don't like policemen, regimental, military or civilian. I don't know why that happened. It seems when you go as a raw recruit, you are told about these people and you find you have no affection for them whatever.
Did you find it difficult to get on with people because you were a policeman?
No, I accepted a different routine with the people who were there. What I can prove is that for the period of time I looked after the guard room, which was my job, and all the people in it, people serving detention, waiting to go to detention barracks, I never had an incident or lost a prisoner. When I was released from that job, two elderly warrant officers was brought in to do that job. Now, they couldn't make me a sergeant, but they brought two warrant officers to do a lance corporal, the job which a lance corporal had been doing. And those two warrant officers lost prisoners time and time again, that the two warrant officers was turned to other units. I don't know who came Prevost Sergeant after that, but that's what really happened at that unit.
Right, can you tell me a little bit about the new duties that you come to when you return to normal duties? What sort of things were you doing there?
Well, I had to learn again. I didn't have to learn soldiering. I knew soldiering. I just had to fit in as a section leader. An infantry section leader responsible for a section. And I'd gone into this barrack room, and I was appalled at the state of the barrack room. To me, I thought the barrack room should have been cleaner. Now, I had heard that the company would not get passes because of the untidiness of the men and the barrack rooms. They went up to the standard of the company commander, so he was stopping all leave. Now, I'd been away from the northeast for a long, long time, and I was quite near home, and I thought, well, I'm not going to have this. I'm going to sort these lads out. And I got them to do things to clean up. And they cleaned the barracks up. The barrack room I was in, they cleaned the barrack room up. I was a little bit unpopular at the time. And then I turned around and said to them, now look here. I said, I want a weekend pass. I said, I don't want to be sitting in this dump every weekend. I said, when I can get a pass, I want to go home. I said, I'm a married man. I said, I've got a wife and a child, and I want to see them as often as I can. So I said, you will work here and get this place cleaned up. I became a little disliked by the full corporals, but even the full corporals were only boys, really. And anyhow, with a bit of elbow grease and a bit of persuasion, the barrack room changed. In that week I was with them, And the company commander said our platoon could have a weekend pass. Now, unknown to me, and the other NCOs not telling me, the sergeants agreed they wouldn't push the men to keep the barrack rooms too clean. No, I thought that was ridiculous. And I was sent for by my platoon sergeant, and there was another platoon sergeant there, and I got a dressing down for not cooperating. I said, what do you mean not cooperating? I said, I've always been taught in the army cleanliness is next to godliness. Sanitation is the cleanest thing you can have. I said, where have you got this idea about keeping dirty barracks? And these were new barracks. Well, not long after that, the two sergeants were moved away, and there was another sergeant moved away. That,
can you remember the names?
Not one was called Palmer. They used to call him Peddler Palmer after a runner or a walker or somebody in the ancient days. And I'm not sure the other two. But anyhow, not long after that, I was promoted to corporal.
Can I ask you what about these sergeants? Presumably were in the same...
They were all soldiers.
Yeah. What about the officer in charge of the platoon? How can the sergeants carry out this policy without the officer saying that he didn't agree with it and telling them to get the barracks tied up?
Well, you see, again, there was young officers coming and were being posted. They were constantly on the move. It was a holding unit, as I explained first. I'd been sent to this holding unit. And you would have young soldiers come in, and as soon as they retained the age of being able to be moved, they were moved en bloc to other countries or to other units, or mainly to the DLI. They were there specifically as reinforcements for the DLI. But, you know, you might have 30 men in one barrack room today, tomorrow you might only have 15. It was constantly movement, but with being a holding unit.
I see. So you were made a corporal?
I was made corporal, yes.
And can you tell me what you did, your duties as corporal?
Same, section leader. But one day we were out on a training scheme, and I had the same lads, you know, used to carry the Bren guns, the mortar. Now, they were heavy weapons. And somehow, the platoon sergeants and the section leaders never thought about changing them around to give everyone the opportunity of learning how to use these weapons. And I said to my lads, I said, no, you'll swap over. And they were rather astonished that I should swap them over. I said, well, he may have to... I said, if you got killed tomorrow in battle, I said, who's going to fire the Bren gun if he hasn't been taught how to fire it, or the 2-inch mortar? I said, you have to be able to take each other's jobs over in the field. I says, at seconds notice, I says, not minutes. I said, you haven't got time to breathe by your changeover. So I said, you'll do it my way. And one well-made lad, I was with him on one of these schemes, battle school schemes, and I heard his chest, and I knew from being an RNO there was something sadly wrong with this lad. And I said to him at the end of the day when we returned to barracks, I said, now, tomorrow morning you will go sick. He said, I didn't want to go sick. I said, you will go sick on a direct order from me. But man, there's not wrong with me. I said, I don't care what you say. I said, I'm giving you an order. You will go sick in the morning. And I said, if you're not on sick parade, I said, you'll be straight under close arrest in the guard room for refusing to be an order. Well, if it's that way, I'll do it. I said, all right. Man, I said, you go sick, and when you meet the MO, tell him that your section leader sent you here because he thinks there's something wrong with your chest. So the lad went sick. They sent for an ambulance, took him away to hospital. That was the last I heard of him. So a while later, I spoke to his pal. There was two of them, they were very close. And I said to his pal, I said, what's happened to Ginger? I said, have you not heard from him? Oh, I said, I've heard from him. He says, back in Civvy Street. He says, the Nars, they didn't do him a good turn when they got him, sent him sick. I said, what? I said, look, I said, to me, he wasn't a fit man. He says, no, he isn't fit. He's only got one lung. I says, he's only got one lung and he was passed year one into the army. He says, aye. He says, the only time he ever got three good meals a day was when he was in the army. He says, no, sent him back to Civvy Street, he'll never get that. I said, well, when you write to him, tell him I'm deeply sorry at having him missing his food. But I said, it was wrong for him to be in the army with only one lung. And I said to his mate, I said, now just fancy you two going into action, and he suddenly collapsed. I said, you would be left with all the ammunition and the Bren gun to manage it. I said, would you be able to do it? He said, it would be an hard graft, lad. I said, yes, and that's why he's not in the army. I said, I want a fit soldier with you. So that
did you come across any other men who were clearly not A1 fit?
Not there, not under my specific command. He was the only one, and I sent him sick.
Would you say it was a not uncommon thing to find people in the army who were?
Well, people who used to be found sick, not fit for field service, were usually put in different units, and they were recorded as such. But this lad was recorded as A1, and I knew he wasn't A1. And when I say I knew he wasn't, again, it was this nursing training I'd had in India.
Yes.
And I knew a chest never sounded like that, what was A1.
Okay. You mentioned battle schools.
The battle school.
Can you tell me about battle school training?
Well, the higher command would send down training instructions to the battle school, which was in the next camp to us.
Which camp was that?
We were in Westwick number 1, I think it might have been Westwick number 2 or number 3, at Barnard Castle. And officers who went to the battle school for training would have to be shown how these exercises worked out, and our battalion did the exercises in conjunction with the Royal Tank, with the Armoured Corps or the Royal Artillery.
What did the exercises consist of?
Live ammunition firing all the time, taking positions, you know.
Were they like mock battles?
Like a mock battle, but there'd be nobody in front of you because you were using live ammunition all the time. You never did an exercise at the battles with the battle school without live ammunition all the time. And you had to move from one point to another point, otherwise you'd be caught in the ammunition. The exploding shells or the bullets from machine guns or rifles. And it was like giving cover and fire in a close attack. I know just about our last exercise, we had one person killed. I think I've read the DLI at War book, and it says it was an officer who was killed, a young officer. Again, I'm not certain about that. I thought it was the officer's batman. I know we returned to camp after one of these this exercise, and it was suddenly found out when the roll call was made there was one person missing, and a search party was sent out and found him. He was pretty seriously wounded, and I think he died either just as they got him to hospital or before they got to hospital. And that was the only casualty we had while I was there. Now, it might sound strange now, but while we were doing these exercises, just before we finished and moved out of Barnard Castle, a company of the 3rd Irish Guards came to show the demonstrations. And they were going to demonstrate some of the exercise we'd been doing. And they had more casualties in that one exercise than our regiment had had in all of the time they were there. Now, they moved the guards out.
How many casualties have they had?
They had numerous. I don't know how many, but they had numerous.
Any killed?
Yes. There would be a I'm not certain of the number of killed, but they had quite a number of casualties. And not long after that, they were moved out. And when we moved out for disbandment, the Devonshire Regiment, a battalion of the Devonshire Regiment, moved in. Not the Guards, but a Devonshire Regiment.
Can you tell me about the disbanding of the 70th?
Well, we moved from Barnet Castle to Camp 1066 near Towelore in County Durham, and we were under canvas, and we were then waiting the time for to disband. Now, at that time, this is my experience, I was one of the instructors for field training at a remote farmhouse in the wilds of Upper Teesdale, where potential officers and what OCO called bad lads, lads who were going absent or not carrying out the duties properly and were under punishment, were sent there to retrain, and the potential officers to retrain with the others under the instruction of two senior NCOs. At that time I was a sergeant then, and another sergeant was there for drill purposes, weapon training.
Can you tell me when you were made sergeant?
Sometime in 42. We'd been on a special training, which I'd mentioned before. Colonel Fillingham used to sort out special training exercises at weekends when we were not required by the battle school. And
what did these special training exercises consist of? Was this just for a chosen few men?
A few, yes. Again, NCOs and potential officers.
Can you tell me what happened at these special training schools?
Well, you'd be given rations on a Friday night and you'd be sent away and told to return maybe on the Sunday night or the Monday morning. And you'd be given a compass marches, and you would be given under an officer, there would be an officer with you, and you would be detailed to go through certain areas of the moors and where to return, which route, if you like. But when you were on that route, the CO would have troops out there as enemy. You never knew where they were at. So reactions to the field training. But what happened on the Saturday night to Sunday morning, there was a heavy blizzard and the roads were about 3 or 4 feet deep of snow, and the officer had relations in the area who had a farm, and he managed to get us into a barn overnight, and of course that put us behind time, and one or two of the men couldn't carry on. They dropped out. They were corporals or sergeants, and they dropped out, and the remainder of us carried on until we got to a village. I forget the name of the village now. It was near Rommelkirk, somewhere around about there. And transport was sent from the battalion to pick us up, because the CO thought we'd had enough.
Were you suffer in any way on that particular march?
Cold with the snow and the no heat. And when we came back, the CO, all the men, the NCOs and men who'd passed that test, were promoted.
How many of these special schools did you go on? Was that just the one? Or was
there there was others. They would send you out just overnight, or, you know, he was like that.
There were similar exercises, though?
Similar exercises. Now, I wasn't on them all, but for other troops in the battalion. Well, yes, he sent them out.
So you were then made a sergeant, were you?
So when we came back to camp, we were sent on 48 hours leave. Mm-hmm. This had been promised by the CO. He'd said that all those who passed the test would get 48 hours leave. So we all returned to camp, except the ones who'd fallen out. And I went on leave. I came to Horton. And I was on my way back to camp at the end of the 48 hours when the military police corporal or sergeant, I forget it now, he was a canny lad. I used to meet him on Darlington when I used to go to detention barracks. And I got off the train from Durham to transfer to the train to Barnet Castle when he said, "Hey, hang on a minute, you're improperly dressed." So I was looking, boots were clean. Gaiters was clean, belt was clean. I couldn't find out wrong. So I said, "Oh, I'll get away." I said, "He's only pulled my leg." He says, "I'm telling you, Geordie, you're improperly dressed." I said, oh, get away. I said, it's only after something. I said, is there after a pint or what? No, he says, it's improperly dressed. He says, not to charge that. I says, get away, man. I said, look, my boots is clean, my anklets is clean, I've got creases in my clothes. I said, there's nothing wrong with me clothes, my cap's on straight and everything else. He says, he is improperly dressed. I says, where am I? He says, I've only got two stripes, they should have three.
And that's when you heard it?
That's when, that was the first time I knew I'd been promoted to Land Sergeant.
What was your reaction to?
Well, I said to him, which was typical, it was typical of the regiment, and I think it's typical of most units, that when a corporal has been made up to sergeant, he stands all members of the present a drink. And I said to him, I said, well, if you'd like to come to Wet Canteen Corporal, I said, I forget what rank he was now. But I got on very well with him. And I said, if you'd like to come with us, he says, no. He said, I'm on duty. But he says, if I ever see you in Darlington, he says, you can buy us a one.
Were you pleased to be promoted?
Yes. Yes, I thought I'd earned it.
And can you tell me, were you given any new duties?
To go over platoon. Well, I was, from being just a section leader, I was a section leader, but then I was third in command of that platoon. There was a full sergeant, a new sergeant, and there was an officer. I don't know the officer's name, but the sergeant I came under was shortly posted from that, from the battalion, when the battalion disbanded, and he became an officer. He was commissioned in Italy.
Can I ask you, was it at this point that you were put in Teesdale?
Mm-hmm.
You had that, was it that where you were placed?
I was placed up there as a sergeant, yes. And I was placed to train, field training, to take the troops out. And I used to take them out on a morning and bring them back at darkness, and sometimes just after dark. They'd have a few biscuits and maybe a bit of cheese in the pocket, and that had to last them all day till they come back. And then they had to make their own meals.
Was this a similar sort of experience as you'd had in the special training?
Yes, something like that. Only this, they were there permanent, you know, instead of just a couple of days, they were there for weeks.
How many men would be out there at any one time?
Maybe about 10 or 15. There'd be an officer and two sergeants, and irrespective of the other ranks, they could be sergeants or anything, they came under us for training.
What were conditions of life like out there?
Wild. Pretty, but you know, it was. I learnt a bit of cooking there, for you know, having to cook meals. I learnt to do a little bit there, and we had a lad there who was very good with pastry.
Now, how did you get all the rations up? Were they brought up by?
Oh, they were brought transport, about one, maybe once or twice a week. Oh yes.
Were you in telephone communication?
No communication whatsoever. If the officer wanted to get in communication with the battalion, you would have to go there. You'd have to get a bus or something like that, or send a letter. But you know, there was a little village, Harwood, and there was a gamekeeper there. Well, we became quite pally with that gamekeeper for the simple reason he knew where he could get eggs, and we had army biscuits. So he had dogs. The dogs liked army biscuits. We liked eggs. So there was a swap. You know, it was done quite reasonable,
yeah.
And the villagers accepted us, the small village.
Was it possible in those sort of conditions to actually have some relaxation, to have some rest?
You were relaxed. You rested at the end of the day's training, enough when you'd had your meal, your evening meal.
What sort of things did you do during those rests?
Well, there was nothing you could do. You had oil lamps in the place. The little village once in a while had a dance, and they invited the lads down. They used to welcome the post girl. There was the gamekeeper's daughter was post girl, and she used to bring the post to the farm, the little farm. And if there was any tea on at the time, they would offer a cup of tea. You know, she was that was the kind of thing. I can't remember anything going wrong. There was one farmer, by the way. He was a Geordie, a real Geordie. But we were in Yorkshire, mind, and this was a real Geordie. And he said to the lads, if any of you can sing me Bladen Races, he said, I'll give you a good tea. So the lads went out the farmhouse, sung Bladen Races, and had a good meal made by his missus. Right.
Was it easy to get out from this
no.
place of Teesdale to somewhere
no,
else?
No, No. I had to walk. I got a weekend pass. I'd been there a long time, a considerable time. And I asked the officer if I could have a weekend off. And he said yes. But I had to walk over the moors about 7 miles to catch a bus. And that bus only run about twice a week. And if I missed that bus, I had to walk the 14 mile back. Well, when I came home, I'd gone home, and when I got back to Crook to try and catch that bus, I'd just missed it. And I had to walk from Crook up the Weir Valley to St John's Chapel, and then about 7 miles across the moors after that.
How long was that march and that walk?
Well, I just arrived in about Rivalli, and what normally would be Rivalli, we didn't have a bugler. But it would be about Rivalli when I got in, and the officer said, you should have been back last night. And I explained to him, you walked all that way? I said, yes, sir. I said, I want to be back on duty. He says, well, you're not doing any training today. He says, you can get yourself a lie down. So that was the type of discipline we had there. It was relaxed. But it was strict, but relaxed. If a man earned a break, he got it.
When did the 70th Battalion actually disband?
I think it would be around September sometime, 43.
And you were still out in Teesdale when it disbanded?
Yes, I was out there, then we came back to the camp. When orders were sent out that we had to come back, and we marched back from there, it took us a full day, and we got back, and then we were told that the battalion was disbanded, and certain lists of names was put on the orders for where they were going and what have you.
What was your reaction to the news at the time?
I felt a little sad because that was the longest I'd been with any of the regiment, any length of time with the regiment from the outbreak of war. I was a little sad when it happened, actually. I think in the beginning of this interview, I was emotional over it. Yes.
And so where did you go from there? Where were you posted?
Well, I was sent on leave. When the disbandment leave, the CO thought I'd earned a leave. And I think I showed you a letter of his appreciation some time back. And he sent me on leave with instructions to join the 10th Battalion at Hamilton in Scotland. And I duly arrived there. And I was still a Lance Sergeant, so I could have been dropped to Corporal. But when I arrived at the battalion, I was interviewed by the CO. He said, well, you won't lose your stripe, he said, because you're taking over a platoon as a Lance Sergeant. He says, in due course of time, if you prove yourself, you'll be promoted to full sergeant, but you're taking over a platoon. So I went to the quarters and I met the sergeant who was there, and he was being removed from the post because of medical grounds. He was unfit for field service. He was going to be sent to another unit, but he was unfit for field service. And the funny thing is, I'd served with him in India, and I'd also served with him as a medical orderly at the hospital. So I was taken over from a lad I knew, and when he saw me go in, and after that a bit chat and carry on, he turned around to the lads in the platoon. He says, well, he says, he's as bad as me, so you know what you've got to put up with. He said, we know each other, we've soldiered together before. So although we were never in the same company in the regulars, we knew each other quite well.